This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, TP or tenement, the not much choice facing the American Indian today. Tonight's guest, Mrs. Fred Harris, the Comanche wife of the junior senator from Oklahoma. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in North America. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-3357. And from the New York area at 866-5010. And now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. It has been more than 80 years since Chief Geronimo surrendered to the United States Cavalry in the Southwest. In the books, that's where the history of the Indian stops. When we see an Indian on the screen or in a tourist resort, we expect him to be authentic to the past. But what about some modern history of the 600,000 Indians who live in the United States today? On two Western reservations, the suicide rate is 10 times higher than the United States average. Half of those committing suicide are under 20 years of age. The average Indian earns about $35 a week. He dies at 43, and his children are twice as likely to die in infancy. Why has the Indian not been able to find his place in the land where he was the original American? How much longer can he survive, caught halfway between his own heritage and a white man's world? These are questions for our Night Call guest, Mrs. Fred Harris, who is standing by in Washington, D.C. Mrs. Harris is half Comanche and knows the Indian West. She is the wife of U.S. Senator Harris of Oklahoma. Mrs. Harris, good evening.
Hello, and good evening.
And thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
Mrs. Harris, should the Indian become part of the American melting pot and move from the reservations to the tenements?
I think this is one of the decisions that hopefully the opportunity will be allowed for the Indian to make himself. This is one of the real dilemmas that we find ourselves in as American Indians and people generally, particularly if you are a member of a reservation, that there is some way that you can keep your identity as an Indian and identify with your Indian heritage and belong to the 20th century. And this is the problem that we face today, and it should be one of a choice, of a determination on a choice that you can make personally, that the Indian himself can make, and not a decision that someone makes for you. And this is the whole purpose in anything that I'm involved in, and the types of programs that hopefully that can be projected for the government to understand and for other non-Indians to understand that this is a decision that the Indian himself has to make. It's not that tribes should be be terminated. But individuals should have self-determination on what they should be. But in that self-determination, they should have equal education, have equal opportunities on the same basis that everyone else has in competition with everyone else. And I don't think that's true today.
Mrs. Harris, most of us in America have learned most of our Indian history from Hollywood. I feel that I can speak for other people as well. I don't feel that Hollywood has done justice in terms of the Indian image. But first, can we talk for a moment about the Indians? When we talk of the Indian, we generally talk of the Indian as of one tribe, or perhaps we may be somewhat aware of the Comanche tribe and maybe one or two more popular. But could you explain to us the difference between the tribes?
I'm very proud to do so because I think this is one of the mystiques in America today. And one of the things that it also bothers Indians, because an Indian who knows who he is very proud of who he is and also very proud of the tribe he belongs to. And that we should know that the Indian people on the East Coast, for instance, the Cherokees, for instance, and the Seminoles, those people are woodland Indians, and their culture had to do with the timber, Their homes had to do with log cabin type, and their whole culture was a very different basic culture. When you talk about Indians, generally, it's almost like saying Europeans, and this is something we need to know, because when you say Indians, you're talking about completely different types of people. For instance, the woodland Indians of the East Coast, and then you have the Plains Indians of the West, in which I'm a member, who were nomadic by nature, by culture, and roam from location to location. And these are the people that had the teepees or the tents or whatever terminology you want to use. These are the people who wore the feathers of what we visually see a great deal on television as visualized as Indians. And then we have the people of the Southwest who live in adobes, who live in pueblos. And these are a completely different culture. Not only are they different in language, but basically that they dwell in communities, whereas the Plains Indians only dwell by tribes, roaming tribes. And then we have the East Coast, again, timberland people, but completely different than the West Coast, and completely different than the East Coast. They were more fish type, their economics or their industry was more directed toward fishery and still has a great deal with timber and with fish. And their lives were their culture was completely different. To say little of Alaska, where we have three different groups of people, is referred to as the Alaskan Natives, which are the Indians, the Eskimo, and there are about two other different tribes of people who distinguish themselves actually from different than Indians. So there's so little fact that the American public knows, and I hope someday to see a history of the American Indian written in such a manner that a school child can be at least halfway knowledgeable of the true facts of American Indians, because we're all very proud of our heritage. I know I'm very proud of being a Comanche and being Plains and being a fierce warlike tribe in our particular time in history, which was played its particular role in American history. And we need to know what that role was and how it moved with the migration of the Europeans into America, and it's important to individual Indians, it's important to Indian children to know how they fit into American history, and the prideful part of America, and what they've contributed, what Indians have contributed to.
Mrs. Harris, may I cut in for just a moment? I wanted to ask, the various tribes that you've mentioned to us and the fact that they came from different regions and there seems to be a difference in the various cultures, was this the cause of a lack of a unified opposition to the invasion of the white man to America?
I think that had a great deal to do with it, and it still lingers on. It has a great deal to do with the reason why there is no really one Indian organization that cuts across a great deal. So we have the National American Indian Congress, Indian Congress, and which is in effect very effective, but still, and it has we have great many more steps to take to be have a national organization, and this is one of the reasons why though we've had a great deal of government programs, they've been so general that they don't fit particular cultures. And so this is one of the reasons why some of the government programs haven't been as successful as they could be if they were more flexible and could fit the types of people that they're dealing with, and which they, of course, there's a great change going on in the federal government now, which I'd like to speak to later. But the point is that the fact that why we are in the position that we are right now is because of the lack of understanding of all these different cultural traits that are throughout the United States. And one of the reasons why was, like you mentioned, that there was no organization between any of the tribes to offset the European invasion.
Mrs. Harris, we have a number of night callers standing by, and they would like to talk to you tonight about our most interesting subject, TP or tenement. There's not much choice facing the American Indian today. And just before we go to our night call listeners, we'd like to remind them that if you'd like to talk to Mrs. Harris, our New York telephone number is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. If you're calling in from the East or the Midwest, it's area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. And on the West Coast, if you're calling in, it's area code 212-749-3357. That's area code 212-749-3357. Remember, we always welcome your calls, collect, and if you'd like to get on tonight and talk to Mrs. Harris, be sure to call earlier. Mrs. Harris, we'll take our first call tonight from New Orleans. Mr. Savory is hearing night call over WDSU. Mr. Savory, good evening.
Good evening, and let's face it, from teepee to tenement is understatement. Our American concentration camps are called Indian reservations. We've had them for generations, but ignore them. We may be guilty of genocide, which we cry out loud about when indulged in by others like Hitler. Now, our ancestors came to this country and murdered all the Indians in sight to get free real estate, then wondered why the Indians reacted savagely. Well, who wouldn't? Our ancestors also imported a few million slaves to get free labor to exploit the free real estate, so we now wonder why we have racial trouble with the Negroes. Now, most of us know that the Ten Commandments have a third and fourth generation clause about the sins of the fathers or ancestors being visited upon the descendants under the third and fourth generation. Now, our Bible doesn't say that we can't do something to offset the trouble that our ancestors have caused the American Indians and the American Negroes right now. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir. Our next?
To comment on that, he referred to the reservation, and that I think that's an interesting observation, but I would like to call to his attention that a great over 200,000 Indians live off reservation. That's the official figure, and in my opinion, it's much higher than that in the studies that I make, that I'm making. In fact, that's one of the emphasis that I'm trying to make with the federal government, that almost half of the Indians now live off reservation. For instance, in Oklahoma, we have no reservation. And half of our Indian population live in urban centers. And then through federal programs and just by natural migration, like everyone else, from rural to urban, are moving into the cities. And because they move into the cities off reservation or off of their Indian inherited property, that an Indian becomes not an Indian, according to the federal government, and is not titled to some of the gratuities that are available to Indians who live on the reservation, which makes it easier to stay on reservation, in effect, because of this. And so this is one of the reasons that I'm very much involved in this, and I'd like to speak to the point of the new National Indians Opportunity Council, which Mr. Johnson established.
Mrs. Harris, can we hold that for just a moment?
We
have the calls coming in, and there are a number of people I know want to talk to you. And we also want to get into the area of the citizens' rights of Indians. You just introduced something that perhaps most of us aren't aware of, what happens to the Indian who is on the reservation, and what new role does he assume once he leaves the reservation. But right now we have a call from New York. Mr. Cantor is hearing night call over WRVR. Mr. Cantor, good evening.
Good evening, though. This is Mr. Peaches Cantor.
How are you?
Fairly well. On the side of the record, waiting for the electrician, the satiric record, where they malign the terrible treatment that white men gave to the Indians, there is a scene where they have the railroad needing to come through, and they need a treaty to be signed with the Indians to push them off into the desert more. And in order to use to negotiate this treaty, they have one of the characters come up, and his line is, "My fellow Redskins." And it seems that they're saying that there were Redskins, forgive me, Indians, that's the wrong term also, Native Americans is the best one, who were out to cheat the Native Americans who were already there, but these were assimilated ones who were out to cheat them. And I'd like to have Mrs. Harris's opinion on this.
That has always been a problem, and it's very difficult in some cases where you have assimilated Indians who have become part of the culture to look back and be able to identify from where he came. And I think you find this in most minority groups. There are a great many, and there are always those cases, and I think they are rare, but they do occur, and you'll probably find that to be a true fact.
Excuse me, is it a myth that it is the Cherokees who are most prevalent at this, as far as the Native Americans?
I know they're the largest group of largest tribe in Oklahoma. I think the Navajo, you'll find the Navajo the largest tribe in the United States.
I wasn't asked about the largest tribe. I mean, traders in Native American cause.
Well, the Cherokees have been exposed to, quote, European culture, our non-Indian culture, I said, probably would be the best term, non-Indian culture longer than most tribes because of their experience with them in the Carolinas and the Virginia area where they first originated from. And I don't, you know, I can't say that they as one tribe are any worse or less, because I think you can find this in any tribe, that there have been people who have let down their tribe or their group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't say this about the Cherokee, but the Cherokee probably has been one of the tribes that have been exposed to non-Indian
mm-hmm.
culture longer than other tribes have.
Mr. Savory, thank you for calling, sir.
Yes,
thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and tonight we have as our guest calling in from Washington, D.C., Mrs. Fred Harris, the wife of the junior senator from Oklahoma, and tonight our conversation is TP or Tenement. We'll return to our guest right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Mrs. Fred Harris after station identification. Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him call. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views, man to man, color to color, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge. And a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and white tell it like it is. Night Call, each weeknight on this station. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Mrs. Fred Harris about teepees or tenements. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Dal Shields.
And we return to our guest, Mrs. Harris, and we have calls standing by in Washington and San Diego. I think we'll take the Washington call. Mr. Brown is hearing Night Call over WAMU-FM. Mr. Brown, good evening, sir. Mr. Brown?
I'm Robin Brown, and I'm calling you from radio station WAMU-FM. I'm the OM here. I'd like to speak to Mrs. Harris, please.
She's on the line, sir.
Okay, Mrs. Harris?
Yes.
A lot has been said about the Indians leaving the reservations and going into the cities. Tell me, has anything been done to create cities out of the reservations? We plenty of new developments going up all around, such as Columbia, Maryland, here in the Washington area.
Yes, there's a great deal of action that is going around on the reservation for instance, bringing manufacturers there and bringing employment to the reservation itself, and also developing reservations into recreation areas that would be beneficial for the Indians, that they could actually establish their own hotels, motel systems, and where they can actually come into their own management. This is a new development under Secretary Udall and Commissioner Bennett, and there's a great deal of action in this regard. And so industry is being brought to the reservation, and there's some new action taking place. This is encouraging.
Okay. It was mentioned that there are a great number of suicides among the Indians, and that many of these suicides happen with people under 20 years of age. Tell me, what is being done to curb this?
Well, they're under Senator Robert Kennedy brought this to everyone's focus in his subcommittee on Indian education, and so now it's really there's been a great deal of study being made. Of course, what really needs to be understood is what brings about what causes suicide, not just to answer the that particular a reaction to a problem, which is the problem is a social acceptance. And I think if the research bears me out, and this is again I should say that this is my opinion of the problem, that social acceptance by the community of where these young Indian students are going to school, and where and how they're accepted in the community, how they're accepted in the school, has a great deal to do with this. And this is the important element, that we should look to the source of the problem, not just to how to eliminate that particular problem, but the real problem is of course, social acceptance.
Mrs. Harris, may I just come in here for a moment? Can we talk about the reservations for a moment? What happens on the reservations? What kind of conditions do the Indians live under?
Well, they vary from reservation to reservation. I've traveled extensively, particularly in Minnesota.
Well, are these cities? Are these urban cities?
No.
Are they communities?
No, they're rural communities, basically. And I think most of you if you saw Life magazine, I think it was in last winter and the great snows that they had in Arizona and Utah, the conditions with the Navajo. But they really do vary from reservation to reservation. Some reservations have been very resourceful, and they've had very good leadership and have really developed great programs. And then there are others who, because of various reasons, haven't been able to develop leadership, or not particular leadership as a sole answer to the problem. But the fact that the conditions in some reservations is unbelievable. People living in car bodies, for instance. This is their only source to sleep. And then, for instance, on the reservations in Minnesota, where they have a great state and federal cooperation, a program of cooperation there, they've done a great deal in that state where they're having a housing program, where it's a self-help housing program on the Indian reservations itself, and I actually saw this, and what the effect that OEO has had, the Office of Economic Opportunity has had on the reservations should be really recognized. This has really been the outstanding movement on reservations, but they vary so that you can't say in any general pattern what the conditions are. You just really need to know that state and that condition, and it's a real study and something one should know if they're involved with.
With all of the monies being spent for low-income housing and urban renewal, and you're saying to me that Indians live in car bodies here in America?
Yes, and as late as 1964, over 60,000, which is, is a great total, had inappropriate housing and very poor condition housing. Now, that's the upturn on that because of under Commissioner Bennett, there's been a great deal of, and of course under some of the housing legislation that just occurred these last 2 years, things are changing, but that's, it's a very slow progress. And one of the things that has happened is that when we pass housing legislation, that it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't, no one thought to say that this should also protect the American Indian until just recently. And now we see that Indians who are off reservation can get into a group and form a corporation and can apply for federal housing. This is a new thing, and it hasn't been very long in developing, so, you know, we have a long way to go to make it really right.
Mr. Brown?
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Harris, and Mr. Shields. As OM, I'm probably one of your most faithful listeners. I say good luck to you and teach, brother.
Thank you so much, sir. Peace. If I sound a bit speechless tonight, it's only because I am. It sounds kind of frightening that we are here in America discussing the problem of the Indians, and I thought we knew something about the history, but I think we have a lot of homework to do. All right, we'll go out to San Diego, California. Mrs. Barone is hearing Night Call over KOGO. Mrs. Barone?
Yes, sir.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity to call. My husband and I were followers of the late Senator Kennedy in his campaign, in his brief campaign for the presidency, and while we were working for him, we became interested, as he was, in the problems of all the American minorities, and in particular those of the American Indian. Unfortunately, his death left a lot of questions that we had, I know personally, unanswered, and they haven't been taken up in the continuing campaign, since there are other problems that seem to be more pressing at the moment. But I would like to ask Mrs. Harris a few questions about the Indians and how they feel about the modern America that they're living in. And I'd like to know, I know how she has risen out of the American Indian reservations, which I've seen and I think are absolutely abominable. The majority of them out in the middle of the desert are no better than what someone 600, 700, 800 years ago would have had down in the lower South America or African colonies. But I wanted to ask her, how does an American Indian get out from the poverty and ignorance that seems to be rampant in any slum area? And what are the American Indians' rights in our society? Do they have full privileges of an American citizen?
Well, I think I'm very proud to hear from someone who supported Senator Kennedy, because he was a very close friend of mine, and I had the privilege of introducing him to my grandmother, and Mrs. Kennedy had her to her home as guest for tea one evening, and it was a very lovely experience for me and for my grandmother. And I hopefully, I don't know that it actually came from our relationship, but Senator Kennedy's interest, vital interest, in Indian education was a great compliment to me, because we also had him in Oklahoma, and he spoke to our youth, Oklahoman for Indian Opportunity Youth Organization. And he was a great inspiration, because he had traveled reservations over the country and different Indian communities, and did know the problem. And his impact on his attention, because of the force of his personality and his interest, brought a great deal of change in the federal government. It was after his serving on the Indian Education Subcommittee in the Department of Interior, not in the Department of Interior, but in the federal government, in the Senate, that I'm not saying because of this, but President Johnson came out and made the best speech, and the only speech, I must say, to the problem that American Indians face today, and the problems of the lack of understanding that the non-Indians of America face today. And he really spoke to the issues. And in his speech, he developed a organization which is now called the National Indians Opportunity Commission, Council. I beg your pardon, Council.
Mrs. Harris, I'm going to ask if you'll allow us to interrupt for station identification and hold your point.
I really will.
And Mrs. Barone, you may stay on if you'd like to, and we'll be right back.
I would like to hear.
All right. This is Night Call in New York. Stay tuned.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Mrs. Fred Harris after station identification. Next week on Night Call, the black vote, international racism, drug addiction, who should run the schools, and can Hollywood tell it like it is? Monday, Michigan Republican State Committee Chairman Earl Kennedy on black votes and white candidates. Tuesday, World Council of Churches head Eugene Carson Blake on Is There an International Mason-Dixon Line? Wednesday, ex-addict Arthur Donmeyer, has drug addiction become a substitute for freedom? Thursday, Rhody McCoy, storm center of the New York school controversy on unresolved crisis of decentralization. Friday, filmmaker Jules Dassin from Paris on his new production, Uptight, a remake of The Informer with a black cast. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in the country to Mrs. Fred Harris about teepees or tenements. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And welcome to the Night Call stations who join us nightly for the second half hour. Our guest tonight, Mrs. Fred Harris, calling in from Washington, D.C. And our conversation is on teepees or tenements, the not much choice facing the American Indian today. And during the first half hour, we've heard some shocking things concerning the conditions of Indians who are living on reservations and living here in America. On the line is Mrs. Barone, who called in earlier from San Diego, California. She's hearing Night Call over KOGO, and Mrs. Harris was about to answer the question posed to her as to what are the rights that Indians have today and what happens to them after they leave the reservations, and Mrs. Harris was also beginning to answer on the new council that was just about to be set up. Mrs. Harris?
Thank you. In response to Mrs. Barone's questioning, and to really emphasize the fact that I think that Senator Kennedy did put great emphasis on the problem of the American Indian, and President Johnson followed through in appointing a National Council of American Indian Opportunity, on which serve the Secretary of Interior, the Secretary of Agriculture, the Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Labor, and the Secretary of Health, Education, Welfare, Secretary of Housing, Secretary of the Director of the Office of Economic Opportunity. And balancing them out is a Indian representation, and I'm one of those people serving in that particular capacity. And my particular interest is on off-reservation Indians, and that was my assignment, I should say. And working with these particular departments, because this has never been done before, and there has been a great deal of focus, I should say, in this last year, year and a half, I would think, that on this specific issue, that that these departments, representing by, actually in our very first meeting, all the secretaries of these particular departments, which means the cabinet members of the federal government, actually met with Indian representation from the representing the whole national Indian scope, and visiting with them, and the Indians telling them what they thought their problems were, and saying how these particular departments can be more effective. As we know, the Department of the Secretary of Interior has the Department of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and they have, they've really stepped up their program. And the Department of Commerce now is very much involved in bringing about industry on reservation and in non-reservation areas. The Department of Labor is in the manpower program is really doing a great deal. As far as education and health and welfare is concerned, they are starting to move, particularly in education.
Well, what are they doing specifically?
You know? Specifically, for instance, what's happened Office of Economic Opportunity is doing a real resource development program in eastern Oklahoma. You know, I know this, I can tell you about Oklahoma firsthand, but in Oklahoma, in eastern Oklahoma, they are bringing about, not only are they helping to bring industry in, but they're training Indians not only to be the labor element of this, but they're also bringing that the Indians themselves will become the management field, that they will, as a term, will say, will follow, shadow the management in of the business, to learn the management in so that they can actually run their own businesses. Now, this is the most important thing, because...
It's about time for that.
Yes. This is the most important thing. This is what we forget. There's so much emphasis put on jobs, but only as jobs as employees, not as employers.
That's it, right there.
Right.
Anyone can learn how to sew or to break rocks up, but they need, for their own self-respect, to be able to be masters of their own destiny.
Exactly. And that's what, this whole self-help, self-determination. And this is what we hope to accomplish in this. And also programs like this to bring to the focus of non-Indian, the non-Indian population, so that they can be more informed and more helpful.
Well, Mrs. Harris, can an Indian just walk off the reservation at any time?
Oh yes, that's totally you have all the equal rights, but it's the opportunity, equal opportunity that is questionable because of the types of education which Senator Kennedy, for instance, really emphasized.
Has there been at any time an attempt to encourage the Indians to leave the reservation so the reservations could be closed?
Yes, there have been several attempts and not very well thought through. There have been what was termed at one time through the Indian Bureau, what they call the relocation plan, where they would take people from reservations or from rural communities and put them in urban centers. But without any,
it would still be a reservation.
Yeah.
Except one with bricks.
Right. Without any kind of understanding of what kind of situation it is, it was almost a total failure. Well, they realized this after a very long period and put in some training and some help after you get to the urban center, because it's very difficult for any rural person to go into an urban center and try to locate and try to handle yourself in those situations. And, I'm a rural person. My background comes from the rural areas of Oklahoma. And I know how many difficult problems I had to face at different periods of my life to become adjusted. But it was a very hard and difficult thing, and it's something that we should have thought through years ago. This is the black mark against, or not the, the real mark against our society, is that we didn't realize these problems before.
Mrs. Harris, I'm going to ask you to hold Mrs. Barone.
I take my answers too long.
Mrs. Barone, I want to thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. I want to thank Mrs. Harris.
Thank you again.
Goodbye.
This is Night Call in New York, and from San Diego, California, we'll go out to Pittsburgh. Miss Jones is hearing Night Call over WAMO. Miss Jones?
Hello.
Good evening.
I'd like to ask Mrs. Harris, what happened to the demands that the Indian Caucus made in the Poor People's Campaign?
What were the demands?
Well, I remember that one of them was they were charging that a number of treaties between the federal government and individual tribes had been violated. The land had been stolen from the tribes and so forth, and I wondered what happened to all those demands.
Well, I'm afraid that they weren't, there was not a great deal of attention focused on that, though I myself did participate in the Poor People's March. That particular angle didn't get much attention from
Well, Mrs. Harris, is it true that most of the treaties signed between various tribes and the United States government have never been lived up to by the government?
Well, again, that varies because every tribe was handled differently.
I see.
And this is a very difficult question to say, you know, answering generally. But if you said to the letter of the law, I would say generally no.
What, would you agree with the statement made by the gentleman who called earlier that the land was robbed of was taken from the Indians? I know it's kind of a broad, generalized statement,
but you would have to say that because we were conquered people. We have to say that conquered in the fact that we were dominated, I should say, and we have to agree to that point because, in effect, that's so, but not conquered in spirit nor effect, I think, and we still are very...
Well, how do the Indian adults teach Indian history to the youngsters? Do you say that the Indians gave up the land to the government of America, or do you say that it was a conquered people?
We stole it.
Is this what is taught?
No, I was reared by my grandparents, and both wore long braids, and my grandmother's still living and wears long dress and wears a shawl, and Comanche was spoken in our home. And the type of history I was taught was a very proudful one, and so I didn't have that particular aspect of it, though I knew it after I studied history in high school. But the type of history that was taught me was the part to be proud of, and hopefully, and there's so many things that Indians can be proud of, and this is what we should focus on, that there are things that they should be a very proud people because they come from a very proud group of people, and they've actually made great contributions to American history, and this is what we should focus on. We shouldn't, it's easy to go back and be critical because I would like to do that because many times I feel very bitter about the outcomes of many things, but to really get the most is I think that doesn't really help the young Indian person that's growing up to be bitter. I think that he should learn what is proudly his and his culture
By learning the early history of the Indians and aware of the fact that it's a tremendously colorful and very glorious history, wouldn't this add to the frustration of the young Indian coming up today and finding out that his history is totally unrelated to what his situation is today?
Yes, and that's one of the problems we have. That's why we have such a large dropout rate in high school. And that's why, our dropout rate is larger than any minority groups in the whole history of the United States. And this is one of the reasons that I'm leaning very heavily on the problems of education with young people, so they can get the proper education, the proper perspective. In the organization which I was former president and helped to start was Oklahoma for Indian Opportunity. And in that group, we started and recruited Indians to go into the Peace Corps, mostly to give them higher horizons, but also they had to know themselves before they could go in. This is one of the real important elements. And really, this is one of the emphases that we make in the program we've developed in Oklahoma, and hopefully we can do, and in many tribes and many other organizations are doing something similar, but I hope we can make it some sort of national program.
Miss Jones?
Yeah.
I took your time, but thank you.
Sorry, Miss Jones. I just carried away.
Yeah, I was particularly interested in what they said at the Poor People's Campaign because the tribe that's closest to us in Pittsburgh is up around where there's now a big dam, the Kinzua Dam. And I've been watching this develop, since I was a little girl, and I'm convinced that the government stole the land from the people and didn't give them what they needed in return. And when Indians from all over the country said the same thing had happened to them when we were in Washington, and I was really appalled that people weren't paying any attention to them at all.
That's really so. And particularly in Pennsylvania, I think most of your Indians are under the state and not under the federal government. They've already been terminated, which is a,
Well, yeah, this business with the Kinzua Dam was a state and federal cooperation, but it was basically a scheme of some Army engineers.
Ms. Jones, thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mrs. Fred Harris, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Mrs. Fred Harris after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, is black a funny color with Godfrey Cambridge? This very funny black man has invented a new game. It's called 50 Easy Steps to the White House, a great new game for discriminating people of all races. You start out from Watts, Harlem, Mississippi, or Newark, and throw one die. Ghetto people are very poor, honey, and can only afford one. When you compromise, Cambridge explains, you get ahead. But when you're too pushy, you go back. At one point in the game, the player must decide whether to be a militant or a moderate. A militant gets ahead by winning a Nobel Peace Prize for a book on black power, but loses two turns for pasting black power posters in the White House John. Is black a funny color with Godfrey Cambridge tomorrow night on Night Call? Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in the country to Mrs. Fred Harris about teepees or tenements. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest once again. Mrs. Fred Harris is calling in from Washington, D.C. And Mrs. Harris, just before we take our next call, one question that was raised on this program some weeks back. We had a congressman calling in from Capitol Hill, and he stated that it was his understanding, he was not quite sure, but it was his understanding that Indians were not permitted to vote if they lived on the reservation. Is this true?
No, it's not true at all.
Indians do have the right to vote.
Yes, everyone has a right. All Indians have a right to vote. This was passed, though this was only passed back in the very early 40s, during in World War II. So,
they were not given the vote until the 40s?
That's right. But that is not true today.
All right. Well, we'll go out to San Diego. That kind of caught me. Mr. Benson is hearing Night Call over KOGO. Mr. Benson, good evening, sir. Mr. Benson?
Mrs. Harris?
Yes.
My name is Edward J. Benson, and I'm from, I'm a Chickasaw Indian from Radio, Oklahoma.
Oh, great. Hello. It's great hearing from you.
What I wanted to tell you about is my family, myself, wife, and crippled baby came to Los Angeles under the Indian Relocation Plan.
Right.
And when we arrived, we were ushered over to a cheap motel temporarily without sleeping facilities for our baby. And before I could get any rest, well, I was given a IQ test completely by surprise, and I imagine I flunked it. And after two or three days, we were put in a cockroach-ridden apartment with broken-down furniture. And actually, I took the first job I could get out of the clutches of the Indian Relocation Office. And we've been out here about 5 years, and I'm a federal construction inspector now, and I owe this to sort of a personal breakaway from the unfair treatment that was given to us. And I wish there was some way that there could be an investigation of the improper use of these funds for Indians.
Well, that's one of the things I had hoped to point out. I think that the Bureau of Indian Affairs have recognized the fact that they've not treated people properly, and because of cases like your own, and I know of all the people that have returned back to their own communities because of the lack of understanding and the lack of programming, you know, taking care of people properly and not telling you what kind of situation you would be involved in. This is, you know, this is tragedy to treat people in this manner, and I certainly can understand it, and particularly coming from a small rural community in Oklahoma like you did. And this is the thing, this is the point I had tried to make earlier, and it really is a tragedy, not only because you are dealing with people, which is the most important thing, but you also are adding to the failures of people, and particularly failures of Indian people become so overwhelming after a period of time that it almost makes it impossible for them to succeed. And I'm just so thankful to hear that you are one of the people that overcome all these problems and have succeeded, because this is a very, very sad thing, and it also reflects on our society as Americans to not understand what happens to people when you put people in these situations. And I think it reflects on us, not just the Bureau as a whole, but our whole lack of understanding how to work with people and to understand what happens to people when you take them out of a certain circumstance or a certain cultural background and put them in another. And certainly there's enough difference in rural cultural background and urban cultural background that this in itself would demand a special attention.
Mrs. Harris, could you tell us how much money is generally earmarked for the cares for the care of Indians by the federal government?
I'm sorry, I really should have that at my fingertips, and I really don't know. At one time, it was all under just under the Bureau of Indian Affairs, under the Interior Department. But now, with the development of the Office of Economic Opportunity, it varies now. And now the different departments of federal government have programs, and it's not just the Department of Indian Affairs, but it's under several other different.
What about the people who work for the Bureau of Indian Affairs? Are these political appointments?
No, not basically. Most of them have come up through the ranks, or who are Social Security people, civil service.
These are civil service jobs.
Civil service people, I'm sorry. And that's really not, but you develop an attitude after a while, I think, and this is the tragedy. I would like, my personal opinion would be that I would like to see a great retraining of any group of people, and particularly the Bureau of Indian Affairs, that deal with human resources or human problems. I would like to see that I would like to see every CAT director take a great community action director in out of the Office of Economic Opportunity to take a great deal of training on how to deal with people who would come from different cultural backgrounds or different ethnic backgrounds, different atmosphere, economic backgrounds even. I think this should almost be a basic part of our program when we're dealing with people who have problems. That we should know these problems. We should know the people that we're dealing with, and we really don't. This is a very sad part, sad thing.
Mr. Benson, do you agree with Mrs. Harris?
I sure do.
What would you suggest?
Yeah, he might have a suggestion.
As a man.
Well, one thing, I think the money really should be for the use of the Indians. The money that is granted for that purpose, rather than trying to squeeze the money down and send it back to Washington so that they can look better themselves, the employees can look better than themselves. That's about what was happening there. They were choking the Indians down to where they couldn't properly live. And I was told there to be careful about anything that we could have gotten, because they wanted to send it back and use it for other Indians. I really didn't believe them.
I think, you know, I think that's one of the things that the BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, has been doing, is really re-examining that program and making a great deal of change and training. I know that they have actually set up training, a transitional period where you go through a area or a camp, kind of a training force for our area, where you would train and then you would go, into your job in the urban centers. And I think this will be a great deal of help in correcting a great deal of the problems that people face.
Mr. Benson, I want to thank you so much for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Good luck to you. Ms. Harris, I think we have time to take one more short call, and we'll go out to Bethesda, Maryland. Mr. Mendelson is hearing night call over WAMU-FM. Mr. Mendelson?
Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, sir.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Mrs. Harris, has television had any effect on the Indian, especially with regards to the Western?
Has television had any effect? And if we may broaden that question, let's talk about television as well as Hollywood. Has it had any effect on the Indian?
Well, television, the fact that they were showing old movies has had a very negative effect, I would say. And the fact, it was very interesting, you might have observed, my husband makes a joke of the fact that if you'll remember, I think the first part of this year, that there was one company that had was going to have a whole series of programs on General Custer. And he said, my husband tells this joke in public or as a story, that I'm certainly glad they took that story off the air, because he was tired of his wife and children picketing the television. But that really is kind of facetious to say that the fact that the National Congress of American Indians, for instance, wrote to this television company and asking them not to project General Custer as any hero, because he certainly was not, and that the media has had great effect. Now, there have been several programs devoted completely to Indians, but. And again, it was not done by Indians. It was done by people who were projecting a certain viewpoint about Indians. And I know that one show that I was interviewed at great length and great expense to their company, and it wasn't used because it didn't exactly project their particular idea of what they wanted to project.
Mr. Mendelson, I'm sorry time has run out on us, and thank you so much. Mrs. Harris, we want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call. And we want to wish you the very best.
Thank you for having such a program.
Thank you for being with us. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, Godfrey Cambridge and Is Black a Funny Color? Listen tomorrow night, discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.